for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Speaking in New York yesterday, President Obama urged the U.S. financial community not to let history repeat itself. He said the time is now to institute strong rules of the road to guard against the kind of risk-taking that led to last year's debacle. Joining me to talk about the kinds of rules being considered, Michael Greenberger, professor at the University of Maryland Law School, former senior regulator of the Commodities Future Trading Commission. Steve Bartlett is president and chief executive officer at the Financial Services Roundtable, joining us by phone from Princeton, New Jersey. Alan Blinder, professor of economics and public affairs at Princeton University. We do invite your questions and comments. You are an important part of the program, so I look forward to hearing from you. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Before we begin our conversation with our guests here in the studio and in Princeton, joining us by phone is Austin Goolsbee. He's a member of the Council of Economic Advisors and staff director and chief economist for the President's Economic Recovery Advisory Board. Good morning to you, Austin
Goolsbee. Good morning, Diane.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
President Obama said yesterday that what took place last year was not just a failure of regulation or legislation, but a failure of responsibility. Explain to us on whose part he meant.
Well, I think he meant on many people's part, obviously. Certainly the bankers themselves failed in their responsibilities to keep track of whether they were taking prudent risks or not. There was a failure on the part of many borrowers and mortgage brokers and a bunch of people down the line trying to take advantage of the system or make a quick buck and pass it on to the next guy. And there was a failure in the responsibility of regulators to prevent kind of the worst of these activities from taking place. All of those down the line, we had failures of responsibility, and they led us into the situation we're in right now. And I think the challenge and the call that the president made for re-regulation and reestablishing the rules of the road is about trying to make sure that we don't get back into that same situation, and that, you know, that we avoid that the next time.
When you use the word re-regulation, what are the systemic risks that the president hopes to reduce?
Well, there are some are the systemic risks that exploded and threatened almost to bring the system bring the system to its knees this time. And then there are other systemic things that might come down the pipe in the future that we have yet to identify.
But
I would say that the most specific ones, one, you had a number of systemically important institutions that were judged either too big or too connected to fail, who were able to arbitrage between regulators and did not have somebody watching them at all times. So AIG kind of squeezes between the cracks. A number of non-bank mortgage lenders squeezed between the cracks so that they were effectively not under the regulation of people that could have prevented their worst behaviors. And so having somebody watching systemically important institutions is probably the most important aspect. But a second is there are a number of products, say credit default swaps or other things, which allowed they were also not really on the radar screen of regulators, and they allowed huge explosions that kind of infected everyone around them. And we need to keep an eye on those broader systems.
So then what specific proposals is the president suggesting for those kinds of institutions you've named as too big to fail and the products that you're talking about?
On that specifically, the president has called that we ought to have systemically important institutions have a day-to-day regulator that is on them at all times. He called for the Fed to be the regulator of systemic institutions and called for a council to be in charge of identifying, looking out to the horizon and identifying products and other things that might be threatening the system that are not yet on the radar screen. So for those two, the president's white paper calls for that.
So who would head this kind of regulatory oversight committee? Would that fall under the aegis of the Fed itself?
No. Well, in the president's white paper, which I would encourage anybody who's really interested in this to go read it, you know, it's 80, 90 pages of detail in this and a bunch of other areas. But for that committee, it would be formed of all the leading regulators, and it would have its own staff, and it would be able to look at that. It would not be under the control of the Fed, no. The Fed's, when people are talking about the Fed as systemic regulator, what they are referring to is the part of the president's plan that would make the Fed the day-to-day supervisor of any institution that is sufficiently big to threaten the whole system. So that in a bank holding company, that is a company that owns a bank, or some entity like AIG or anything big enough to threaten threaten the whole system, the Fed would impose capital requirements, make sure they don't have too much debt, they're not too leveraged, make sure that they're behaving in a prudent manner.
So you're talking, as I infer, about the establishment of a whole new regulatory agency.
Yes, for consumers. That is an important part of the president's regulatory reform idea, that we ought to have a consumer protection agency that would take the, you know, consumer protection is now spread out, disjoint across a whole bunch of agencies, and as a result, in a lot of circumstances, we saw has been sort of the forgotten nephew, as it were. And the president believes that we ought to have one agency that is accountable for protecting consumers. If we had had that, we could have prevented, for example, what occurred in the subprime lending space, where there were rules on what banks were allowed to do, what kind of lending standards they had to apply to subprime mortgages. But those rules did not apply to non-banks. And so as a result, two-thirds of the subprime lending came from non-banks who were just evading the regulations. If you had a consumer protection-based regulatory agency that had the authority to oversee the entire financial system as applied to these consumer protections, much the same way we're talking about with credit cards, I think you could have prevented a lot of the worst aspects
of this. So you would think that the so-called shadow banking system currently that had a lot of these shaky products would be watched over by this consumer-based protection regulatory agency?
Yes, in the sense that, look, the consumer protection agency is about protecting consumers and looking at individual types of products. It's very similar to what exists now. It's just that in the existing circumstance, the Truth in Lending Act is enforced by the Fed. Other parts, you know, the HUD-1 form goes through HUD. So the consumer protection, there are a bunch of rules about financial products, but they're divided up amongst a whole bunch of agencies. They're bogged down in bureaucracy. In some cases, they aren't enforced, and there's often confusion. Whenever you've got this like spread across multiple agencies, you run the risk that the special interest, the person that wants to take advantage of the rule, is going to find the least stringent regulator and kind of get all of their activity under that person. Well, that's why you need one agency.
Well, and I'm wondering how much pushback you believe you're going to get about the establishment of this agency.
Well, we've already started getting a fair amount of pushback from the Chamber of Commerce. I'm sure the guest you're going to have from the Financial Services Roundtable is going to express displeasure. The thing is, I don't see how you can look at what has just happened in the 1 year since Lehman collapsed and in the, you know, year or two before that and think that the status quo was working. I mean, with the status quo failed terribly, and we cannot go back to that. And I think we've got to protect consumers and protect investors. And that's not the only thing we need to do, but that's certainly got to be at the heart of our reforming of the financial regulatory system. We cannot go back to a regulatory system which is essentially written by and primarily geared for the banks or the financial institutions themselves, because we have seen that it doesn't make you anti-financial markets to be for regulatory oversight being more robust. In fact, the lessening and ripping up of the rules of the road deeply contributed to the collapse of the financial sector. And so we've got to reform that.
Austin Goolsbee, he's a member of the Council of Economic Advisors. I do thank you for joining us. I wish you good luck.
Thank you
so
much.
In your efforts. Thanks for being with us. And welcome back. As we talk about President Obama's statement in New York yesterday, speaking to the major financial institutions, that changes must be made in the way we look at and regulate those institutions. Joining me here in the studio, Steve Bartlett of the Financial Services Roundtable, Michael Greenberger, professor at the University of Maryland Law School. Joining us by phone is Alan Blinder, Princeton University. He's professor of economics and public affairs. If I could start with you, Alan Blinder, was there anything really new in the president's address yesterday?
No, I don't think there was intended to be anything new. As Austin was just saying, the president sent down a very lengthy plan in, I think it was June. Over the ensuing weeks and months, the Treasury has transformed that into legislation, which it sent down to the Hill. Both houses of Congress are working on this now, although it doesn't look like the Senate's done very much. There's a lot more progress in the House. I think the intent, the clear intent, was to jumpstart or try to jumpstart a legislative process that seemed to be sagging at best. people forget a little bit too easily, and people are breathing lots of sighs of relief for good reasons. But as Austin was saying, that doesn't mean we've addressed the problems that caused this calamity in the first place. And I think the president's intent was to refocus attention.
Michael Greenberger, what Austin talked about a somewhat stronger role for the Fed in oversight, but he also talked about the establishment of this consumer protection agency. What are the arguments for and against? First, a stronger role for the Fed. Second, the establishment of this new agency.
Yes. Let me say first, Mr. Goolsbee suggested that we read the 90-page white paper. I would suggest that we read yesterday's editorial in the New York Times, which breaks these down into three subjects, the pros and cons, and comes out with conclusions about where the paper recommends we come out, which I completely, by the way, agree with. With regard to the Fed being the systemic regulator, the point there is that there should be some institution that looks over the entire markets and economy and calls out problems in the economy. For example, seeing an institution like AIG, which is worth $200 billion in equity, having one of its subsidiaries guaranteeing $400 billion of subprime mortgages with no capital set aside. When you talk about blowing holes in the economy, there's $400 billion that was promised, put on financial balance sheets, and was never there. So the idea is that there should be somebody looking out for things that escape the frontline regulators and addressing it. And if it's too late to do anything about it to save the company, taking the company and resolving its problems short of bankruptcy. The problem here is Lehman went into bankruptcy a year ago. It was a calamity. That's the too big to fail concept. So from there on out, we rescued. We rescued it. We rescued and bought AIG, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. We guaranteed Bear Stearns $29 billion. The idea is that someone should be able to disassemble these institutions short of that. And the argument is, should the Fed do it or should the so-called Council of Regulators? And the Council of Regulators is supported by some because it's thought to be more democratic and it represents everybody and would be more accountable to the president and Congress.
Are you saying that as opposed to the Fed?
Yes. The issue is, should it be the Fed or the Council of Regulators? The Obama administration as a whole has supported the Fed. But people like Sheila Bair and I believe Mary Shapiro, chair of the SEC, have broken with the administration and support the Council of Regulators.
Steve Bartlett, how do you see it?
Well, we think it's bottom line is it should be the Fed, that the Federal Reserve is the logical place to have a systemic look.
Why?
We think that because the Fed has the overview of the entire economy.
But why didn't the Fed see what was happening to Lehman Brothers, to the other institutions?
Woulda, shoulda, coulda. Everyone made a lot of mistakes. The Fed missed it. Our organization missed it, for which we have taken responsibility and apologized literally to Congress. But the bottom line is because the system today, including the Fed, is a chaotic system. There are literally hundreds of different agencies, of which the Fed is put into this basket of hundreds that oversee a piece of it. So we think one thing that ought to happen is to bring the Fed up and have it have a systemic review of the entire system. And then we believe that then the Fed should act through the existing prudential regulators, but give the Fed the power to require action and in an emergency take action themselves. So we think the president is in the right direction. We would make some changes along the edges, but we think in terms of giving the Fed systemic risk regulation, that's the right answer.
Alan Blinder, how do you see it?
I agree with Tim Geithner, who basically said this is an open and shut case. There are a lot of other things that are highly debatable. But for this job, you need an agency that is, first of all, fiercely independent. Secondly, powerful, including, by the way, the need to make emergency loans, so-called lender of last resort function, which only the Federal Reserve has. As was mentioned, the Fed has the kind of purview and skill set that is necessary for this task, though you're quite right, Diane, it did not do a very good job last time around. And then finally, this job of watching over, I almost said ensuring, there's no such thing as that, but watching over financial stability is a close cousin to monetary policy, which is the Fed's main job. And to me, it doesn't make any sense to separate the two.
Are you saying that you don't see a reason to establish a separate regulatory council?
No, no, I think it's perfectly fine and indeed desirable to establish a regulatory council. No one ever thinks that the Fed is the source of all knowledge, and the SEC, the CFTC, the FDIC, and others may be seeing things in their corner of the world which ought to be brought to the attention of the systemic regulator. Now, of course, they would do this anyway, but I think the council is a quite reasonable way to make sure that information is brought to bear. And by the way, to act as a kind of informal check on the Fed's authority. If the council thinks the Fed is not behaving well, it can say so.
But there, Michael Greenberger, couldn't you see some turf wars really beginning to be established?
Well, first of all, the option here is the Council of Regulators, which is nothing more than what is now called the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, which is set up by executive order since 1987.
So you don't need Congress to get involved.
Well, no, they now would take what is a non-statutory institution and codify it and give it a staff. But it's the agency that has come together in every crisis since the 1987 crash. It's not a new institution. And with regard to the Fed being fiercely independent and powerful, my answer is the Fed was fiercely independent and powerful from 1999 to September 16th, 2008, and that fierce independence and powerfulness was telling the American people, do not worry about this problem. These people on Wall Street are very smart, and they can take care of themselves. You had outliers, like even in the Bush administration, which was a laissez-faire classical economist approach to regulation, you had outliers like Sheila Bair, who continually warned. Now, if you make the Fed the single regulator, the Sheila Bairs of this world will drop off to the side and not be a powerful voice. In a council of regulators, you will have a dialogue headed by the Secretary of the Treasury, who is responsible to the president and can be overseen by Congress. Mr. Bernanke wants it both ways. He said he should not be overseen because he has responsibility for monetary policy, which should not be political. And, oh, by the way, he wants to run the economy, and you can't oversee what he's doing there. It's an intolerable situation. We'll be handing enormous power to a single individual, and we've seen these single individuals fail big time.
How do you respond to that, Alan Blinder?
I think, first of all, the charge that the Fed did not acquit itself of its regulatory responsibilities in that period is certainly correct. I mean, and almost everybody says so. I certainly agree with that. You know, people and institutions are fallible, and infallibility is not going to be established. Second point is, and this is an important point that often gets lost, the Fed is independent vis-a-vis its monetary policy and needs to be independent. The Fed has never had that kind of independence when bank regulatory and supervisory issues are concerned. For example, in this hodgepodge of regulators that we've spoken about, the Fed is often jointly regulating institutions with, say, the OCC or the OTS or the FDIC and so on. When regulatory decisions are made, they're made jointly by the regulatory agencies, not dictatorially by the Fed. And nobody is suggesting that the Fed just be given absolute power without any oversight or checks or balances or anything like that. Michael mentioned the Secretary of the Treasury. It's quite appropriate that the Secretary of the Treasury, as the CFO of the country and the president's representative, have a lot to say. And this council, you know, I just don't agree that somebody as bright and fearless as Sheila Bair, for example, Michael mentioned, would, under this other structure, just sit there silently. I mean, why should she? She didn't under this structure. She spoke out quite frequently and courageously and more often than not.
And
correctly.
Of course, was ignored in the process. You have to acknowledge that her sounds that she made early on, warning of what was going to happen, were totally ignored. What you're saying is that in this situation with the Fed once again taking the lead here, that she would not be ignored?
I what I'm saying is I don't think that changes it in a material way. She, as it turned out, she was largely ignored. But, you know, it must be pointed out that it wasn't like the other bank regulatory agencies, the Fed, the FDIC, et cetera, were cracking down on these bad mortgage practices while the Fed wasn't. They were all failing to crack down. I don't mean to take any credit away from Sheila Bair, who I think saw this much more clearly than the others. The question is, the question is, can you fight a fire by a committee? Or is it better to have a single firefighter who is then accountable if they fail?
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Steve Bartlett, what do you see as the arguments against a separate consumer protection agency?
Well, we're going to get better consumer protection, and we need our group has called for better consumer protection for a while now. Our biggest dispute, our biggest dispute is whether it should be a separate agency that's separated from safety and soundness. So in the beginning, there is safety and soundness, and we've discovered what happens if you allow bad loans to move into the system and then collapse the system. The consumers are ultimately are the biggest losers. So what we would do is take those consumer protections and build them in with a mandate, with statute, into the prudential supervisors, but then also provide this council that we talked about, the outgrowth of the president's working group, to coordinate those consumer protections to make sure that they all are all singing on the same wavelength, perhaps even to write the regulations going forward and then have the enforcement be by the safety and soundness of consumer protection, safety and soundness regulator.
Michael, it strikes me as I listen to all this that it's way up here. And consumers are way down here, and that they really may listen to this and think, well, this is a tactical argument as to who's going to have the power, but what's it going to do for me? How is it going to help me?
I would say to that person, if you've ever looked at your contract for your credit card, if you've ever looked at your insurance policies for your home or your car, if you've ever looked at the documentation of your student loans and think that you're comfortable and understand what your rights and obligations are and that all those documents meet consumer requirements, you should be against this consumer protection agency. If you look at things like that and you sign them, knowing if you spent 3 hours, you would never understand what that boilerplate means, you need a single protector in the federal government who will look at that documentation for you and pick out what is right or what is wrong with it. If somebody had gone over the subprime loans, the mortgages, and looked at those carefully, it would have been like shooting fish in a barrel to see the unfairness to the person taking out the mortgage. So if consumers are befuddled by the contracts they sign on a daily basis, they should be looking for a single institution, looking at the boilerplate to protect them. If they're happy signing these documents and finding that interest rates go up on products you've already bought with your credit card months ago, unilaterally be against this agency.
I just don't see that you get a better result or more clarity with a different government agency that then is in conflict with other government agencies. I think you have to require the agencies to be clear, to be forthright, to protect the consumers, and to be coherent, so you give one set of instructions and not two sets or three sets.
But if you have the Fed in charge of monetary policy, how from its lofty position in charge of monetary policy is it also going to pay close attention to what I, as an individual, have to deal with?
Actually, it would be the Fed that's in charge of supervising some banks, many banks. So they're the bank regulator for member, what are called member banks. So we think that if your regulator goes in and says, stop making this kind of loan, then you have to stop making it. That's what didn't happen in this last round.
Why do you think that
happen? It was bizarre. We went back and sort of tried to reconstruct by the summer of 2007 and 2008 and discovered that the bank regulators had, in fact, identified that many of these mortgages were bad mortgages. But they believed that they only had the power to tell the banks not to own them. So they told the banks to sell them,
and they
sold up to Wall Street.
Exactly.
And there was no connection.
To places like AIG.
So what we're suggesting is make that connection, make that systemic connection, so that the bank regulators have the power, so give them the power to act on behalf of the consumers.
Steve Bartlett, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Financial Services Roundtable. When we come back, I'd like to hear from you, your thoughts, your ideas on these changes that President Obama is suggesting in order to avoid a new problem.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. And by Global Nutritional Research, maker of Clotamin, a multivitamin designed for people on blood thinners, at clotamin.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Healthcare reform, focusing only on access to the current system, is doomed to fail, says Dr. Andrew Weil, the best-selling author and physician on why prevention is key to transforming medicine and lowering costs. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And we'll go to the phones now, 800-433-8850. Let's go first to Catherine, who's in Indianapolis. Good morning to you. Go right ahead.
Yes, good morning, and welcome back, Diane. I'm glad to see that you returned.
Thank you.
my question has to do with the substance of this regulation, because I hear all this conversation about, well, is it going to be the Fed? Is it going to be a regulatory council? Well, if there's not any meat behind what they're going to do, I don't care who does the regulating. What I'd like to know is if there's going to be any kind of specific language that will require every financial product, no matter who sells it or who provides it, to fall under some kind of regulation. And I'd also like to know if part of that process will include identifying financial products properly. For instance, my understanding is that part of the reason why AIG went under is because they were undercapitalized. They sold a form of insurance, but they decided to call it credit default swaps, which therefore kind of let them get around the whole insurance requirement.
All right. Michael.
Yes, I think the listener is right on target. What we haven't talked about here is that there was a huge multi-trillion dollar market, mostly referred to as swaps, that were completely unregulated. And the Obama, and this is the third part of the prong, consumer protection, systemic regulation. But the most important, as the listener says, is are we at the get-go going to regulate the products as they come onto the market? And the Obama administration has, in this regard, good and bad news for the consumer. The good news is they have an overarching template, as the listener says, that every one of these products will be regulated to make them transparent and adequately capitalized. Adequately capitalized, if AIG had had to put up capital for its credit default swaps, which were really insurance, they never would have entered into these products. They didn't have the capital to support it. And because they didn't have the capital, when the insurance came due, there was a hole in the economy that you and I made up by paying $185 billion to AIG. Now, the bad news is that when the Treasury sent up the legislation, much to the surprise of everybody, there were loopholes in it that exempted any one of these instruments that weren't conducted by a major market participant. Gary Gensler, the chair of the CFTC, Geithner sent this up on the 12th. On the 17th, Gary Gensler sent a letter to Congress saying there are exceptions in the Obama administration proposal that swallow the general rule. And if the listeners do not understand this, they must get on top of it. There are billions of dollars being spent on one side of this equation. Weaken these regulations. The consumer is effectively represented by volunteers here. Mm. It's unweighted, and the only thing that will make up for it is people paying attention, or your pocket will be picked again.
Alan Blinder, do you want to comment?
Yeah, no, I think your listener is spot on. I mean, it's ultimately not the structure but the content of the regulation that matters. So there is an emphasis on more capital. There's an emphasis on more liquidity. What are the things we learned in this? Well, we knew this before, but we learned it again in a very, very painful way, is that institutions that may still be solvent, that is, they're not, their debts don't exceed their assets, can nonetheless be pushed in that direction by running out of cash, not having the cash to make payments and having to fire sale assets. The risk management systems need to be improved. And importantly, which is not to dispute what Michael just said, but importantly, there's an emphasis in this proposed set of laws on not getting tangled up in the exact title that something is some company's a securities company and not a bank, and therefore it's treated differently. The idea is you treat the same instruments the same way, regardless of their name, and you treat systemic risk the same way, regardless of whether it's an insurance company or in a bank or in a securities firm. So ultimately, it's absolutely the substance. And as they say in all legislation, the devil will be in the detail.
Of course. Steve Bartlett.
Dr. Blinder is absolutely right. Or we like to say, if you walk like a bank and quack like a bank and talk like a bank, you should be regulated by a bank regulator. And that's not the case right now. One of the strengths of this proposal is that you would regulate the unregulated. But the administration's proposal falls short in about one-third of the financial services world, and that is the large insurance companies are exempted from this and not provided with a national regulator. So we think that the large insurance companies that go across state lines and are global in some cases, read AIG, should have a national charter. And a national charter, and the current proposal doesn't provide that. That'll be a subject of some debate in Congress, and we hope that an optional federal charter is added to it. That would be an improvement.
Here's an email from Bob in Cincinnati who says, having watched the testimony by the SEC officials before the House and Senate committees, it's clear these agencies are so massively dysfunctional, they are unable to perform the roles assigned to them. It was clear from the testimony and episodes like the Madoff scandal that they do not have the basic financial knowledge to perform their role. How difficult would it be to do house cleaning and consolidate these agencies into an agency that performs some useful purpose? I would just add something here. I was stunned to hear bits of the telephone conversations that Bernie Madoff had in regard to instructing people what to say to the SEC, because he described them as easily culpable, easily fallible, easily, they were jokes, he was saying. Michael Greenberger.
Well, first of all, the SEC is an old agency that came up from the New Deal and historically has been very well run. Actually, from the mid-90s, there was tremendous pressure put on it by Congress not to regulate.
To back off.
Right. And even when Arthur Levitt was the chair of the SEC and wanted to do aggressive protective things, Phil Graham, who was chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, every time he threatened to do something aggressive, Graham threatened to cut his budget. And that comes from an overriding philosophy that went up to the meltdown and may survive the meltdown, that regulation is bad.
Well, I'd take it a slightly different direction. The SEC, one of the legitimate criticisms that people have made of the SEC has been over the last 10, 20 years, is that it's been all enforcement after the fact, and sometimes never even that with the Madoff deal, and then all and disclosure, but no prudential supervision. So one of the things that we've encouraged, and is not in this legislation, but should be, is to build in for financial companies some regulatory supervision, prudential supervision. Now, that's not on the table. It should be, but the SEC is still just only an enforcement agency, and if you get there after the vault has already been cracked and the robbers are already down the highway, then you got to go catch them. But you haven't prevented the bank
robbery. All right, to San Antonio, Texas, Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Diane. Well, you've been talking about some of the things. I don't know, my radio's turned off.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm getting feedback. Okay, the problem seems to me that we're talking about the SEC. When you get ideologues like Cox in there or Greenspan running the Fed, you have these lacuna that people just don't want to look at all. It looks like, to me, you need more Cassandras than this one person that has been mentioned, Bear.
Sheila Bear.
Yes. And also, it seems to me that in this and the medical problems and everything else, that some public support for voting has to go in there. I mean, you know, if you have these lobbyists who can throw money out, I mean, we have all kinds of information about the financial Wall Street throwing money at Congress right now. You've got a problem.
What do you think, Alan Blinder?
Well, I mean, your listener raised a very, very big question about lobbying in general. This being one example, a lot of us think it's run amok. What to do about it is another thing entirely. I mean, the Supreme Court has declared it protected speech, which makes it very, very difficult to do anything about it. Your caller also started with the point, which is exactly correct, which I obliquely made earlier, that people matter. You can have the greatest structure in the world, but if you have people that are looking the other way, because of ideology or because of incompetence, it's not going to work. And you know, in the Madoff case, the incompetence or the willful ignorance, I don't know enough about the details to know, was breathtaking. You didn't have to do very much to find out that there weren't counterparties to these trades, and it wasn't done. So, you know, as Michael said, the SEC, I think, really has a very good history since 1934, but with, of course, some blemishes, and this Madoff one was an extremely large blemish.
Here's an email from Jake. He says, though this is very interesting, I wonder why the Glassman-Steagall Act, or more importantly, the repeal of this act, is often ignored. If not for this repeal, then the most risky investors would not have been allowed to enter into the mortgage business, which is what ultimately caused this collapse.
Well, not exactly. In fact, not so at all. The Glass-Steagall Act was repealed over the course of 30 years by exception and loophole. And when Congress finally acted with Gramm-Leach-Bliley in 1999, it was a recognition that the American consumers, both business and individuals, were looking for ways to finance their worlds, and they were finding those ways outside the system. So Gramm-Leach-Bliley brought more coherence to it. If we hadn't had Gramm-Leach-Bliley, then this whole collapse would have been far worse and less so. Is it perfect? No, but the Glass-Steagall was not not something to write home about. And by the time it was finally repealed, it was all but Swiss cheese full of loopholes.
Michael,
I agree that there were loopholes, but the ultimate repeal of it essentially said that depositors were no longer going to be protected by having commercial banks set in a special status, and it freed everybody up to go into this Wild West investment. And I will also say a book that I think is just an excellent to read is A Colossal Failure of Common Sense. It's The Fall of Lehman Brothers. It's a bestseller. Despite that fact, I find it very, very informative. And the writer there who was at Lehman said the two instruments of government policy that allowed Wall Street to run wild were the downfall of Glass-Steagall and the passage of the Commodity Future Modernization Act, which deregulated this multi-trillion-dollar swaps market from the New Deal protections of transparency and adequate capitalization.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Alan Blinder.
Yeah, if I could weigh in on
sure.
that. I think if you try to ask yourself, what of the many, many bad things that happened in this series of calamities would have been prevented if Glass-Steagall was still in effect? There's practically nothing on the list. Merrill Lynch did what it did, not because of Glass-Steagall. Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, AIG, none of them had anything to do with Glass-Steagall reform. Same with Bank of America until it came and rescued Merrill Lynch, which it could not have done if Glass-Steagall had not been effective. The only possible case that people point to is Citi. And in fact, Citi had basically had all of those pieces in place before Glass-Steagall was formed. And you know, they decided to jettison Travelers, which is something Glass-Steagall allowed that would not have been allowed before. So there's really lots of things were done wrong, and essentially all of them could have been done wrong with Glass-Steagall.
Okay. Alan Blinder, take us forward. What needs to be done right to ensure that this kind of risk-taking does not occur again? Will the president's ideas, if they are put in place, do what's needed to be done?
Well, I think they'll be very helpful, and I would call attention to three, but there are many, many others, and they've all already come up in our conversation. One is to get some sort of regulatory arms around the wild and woolly derivatives world, and that is part of the proposal. A second is the systemic risk regulator that we've been arguing about. A third that we haven't really talked about is the so-called resolution authority that came up obliquely. A way to lay some of these too-big-to-fail institutions to rest peacefully instead of a spasm that destroys a lot of people and a lot of businesses around them.
And
but if I could add one
sure.
more thing, I think there's one more crucial thing, and I don't know that the president's proposals will do much about it, and I'm not sure I have any great ideas about it either, and that's this: that the boards of directors of a lot of these companies simply did not step up to the plate and do what they're supposed to do in the interests of the stockholders, not to mention in the interests of the broader public. And I think we need to figure out some way to shake boards of directors awake and get them performing better.
Shape boards of directors so that they are more accountable to the individual investor rather than to the corporation?
Rather than to management. That's exactly correct.
And from you, Steve Bartlett.
Well, let me start with boards. I see, of course, there were a lot of blame to go around before the crisis, but boards of directors have picked up a lot of the responsibility over the course of the last year in terms of compensation practices, long-term performance. I think we ought to have stronger consumer protection embedded into safety and soundness, a systemic risk oversight at the Federal Reserve, and then principle-based regulation from this council that has been talked about. And I also concur with the resolution authority that needs to be put in place.
And finally,
if there's a silver bullet, I go back to the caller who said every major financial transaction should be transparent and adequately capitalized and overseen aggressively by a federal regulator. Unfortunately, the Obama proposal stopped short of that on August 12th. Gary Gensler, the chair of the CFTC, has called that out. And the listeners should insist on transparency and adequate capital for all major financial transactions.
Michael Greenberger, professor at the University of Maryland Law School. He's former senior regulator at the Commodities Future Trading Commission. Steve Bartlett is president and chief executive officer of the Financial Services Roundtable. Alan Blinder is professor of economics, public affairs at Princeton University. Thank you all so much. We shall watch with great interest. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.